Winemaking is the eternal learning curve. The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn.
At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold, but if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work.
And Mother Nature is your partner all the way until it's done.
Whereas the U.S., you go into a big grocery store and you have 2,000 different glass bottles full of wine.
My father told me, never work for money, work to accomplish something. Making money is the result of doing something right.
The bottom line is, it's all about the soil.
Well, the results are really the benefit of our doing our homework.
What makes winemaking so interesting and fascinating is that every single year it's been different.
There was definitely a sense that we were all sort of in a pioneering endeavor. It was fun.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to podcast number 116. This week we feature another chat with Ray Signorello of Signorello Estate.
We originally recorded Ray Signorello way back in May of 2010. And needless to say, a lot has changed in Napa since the 2010 vintage. We usually run into Ray at various events around the valley, but this time we sat down for a way overdue follow-up interview back in February of this year. We're here with Ray Signorello. Ray, how are you doing?
Good, great, thanks.
Nice to see you again, and thank you for inviting us back. Do you remember when we did the last...
It's been a few years.
It's been 4 years. Well, it'll be 4 years in May. You're a podcast number 16, so we were still digging through the trenches back then.
A fledgling business.
Yeah, it shocked me that it was so long ago. Thanks very much for having us back.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And I guess the first question I have is, so what's new? What's going on out here?
Well, there's a lot going on out here. In my family, I've got two kids since I last saw you. I've got two little girls, so... Athena and Alessandra, so my home life has changed a bit, and the wine business has changed quite a bit. I think last time we were here, we were in a very tough time in the U.S. economy, and things have gotten a lot better. We have expanded our operations here. We've pushed a lot more business right at the winery, and we have a whole lot of new folks. Chef, I don't know if there was a chef last time you were here, but...
I believe there was.
Was there?
Yeah, I think so.
So Chef McMillan. Now we have a new gal that came aboard about, it's been just about a year now. So we're excited to have her aboard. So really, focusing on our food and wine offerings. I'm a big believer of, wine really needs a foil, and the foil is food. Going to Europe quite a bit, I learned that from the old wise wineries in both in France and Italy, and how they can approach their customer. It's a little different than some of the New World, and I'm trying to take some of that old world and bring it to Napa Valley.
I think it's nice when you walk into the tasting room, of course, the first thing you see is the typical tasting bar type setup, but then, of course, there's the kitchen area right there. And, aromas really smack you in the face right away, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the kitchen's right front and center. It's a presentation kitchen and an open plan, and people get the message as soon as they walk through the door at the winery that, we have food here. We serve some wonderful American Kobe beef, American Wagyu beef. It's from Snake River Farms. We have a partnership with them, so we incorporate their product every day, and it's a great match for the wines that we make.
That's really a wonderful thing to offer people. It's above and beyond what a lot of other wineries do.
Yeah, it's as you can imagine, making wine itself is quite the endeavor, but when you add the food component, which is almost like a restaurant component, albeit it's a restaurant where I can dictate a little more. There's no bill at the end of the meal, and the menu is set, Yeah, it really broadens what we have to do here, and it's a great challenge because the reward is food and wine.
Yeah, that's great. And what better reward can you get out of that? Do you have favorite? Other than the Kobe beef, are there certain things you have to make that are your personal favorites? Or
in the kitchen? Well, that is, you know, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, I guess it really is. That's true. Yeah. I just thought, you know, being of Italian heritage, maybe there's some kind of a handmade pasta or something.
Well,
that's, you
we
know,
love our pasta, yeah, here, too.
Just to go back to how you've grown, in terms of how many cases you're doing these days, just to update that.
Well, at the estate here, we do about 7,000 cases. So we've been blessed with a couple really, really nice vintages, 2012 and 2013, which gave us really good quality as well as some nice quantity. Back in 2011, we made about half the typical level of wine here. So we have somewhat difficult as far as production. The wine's beautiful, but the yields were low. And even in 2010, we didn't make a lot of wine here. Mother Nature every year gives you a different set of things to play with. And luckily, the last 2 years have been good.
Yeah, as I recall, 11 was very wet, and now we're in the middle of, well, the middle, not even the middle, but we're into 14 now, and now we've had the issues with it being dry.
Yeah, we have not had a lot of rain around here, and it's been a big concern. There's been a lot of talk about that and water rationing and whatnot, but yeah, we're hoping, we're keeping our fingers crossed that we're going to see a little more rain, and was it a week ago? We saw a little bit, but you know, back east, they're seeing a lot of precipitation, more in the form of snow probably, but it's not coming our way as much.
Had I thought about it, I would have stuck some in my suitcase for you and gladly delivered as much as you liked. Of course, you guys could go to the mountains if you want to, if you want snow. But seriously, this packs a double punch really for you, because it's not just the idea of the water you need to operate as a farmer, but also the dangers in terms of how dry it gets out here for fires.
Yeah, there's always the risk of fire. So on our property, we have two wells, so we've got a fair amount of water. We're not really that worried about the vines themselves, but in general, the reservoirs are low, and we need water just to, you know, keep the vegetation, the greenness, if you will, so that we don't find ourselves in a fire situation. Well, this time of the year, sometimes you see, you know, green out there, and we're not seeing a lot of that right now. And, you know, the risk of fire is twofold. One, obviously the direct risk. I mean, you could lose some of your vineyards, but just the smoke itself can induce some issues into the wine. The grapes pick up the qualities, you know, the smoke residue, and you make a, you know, what is essentially a barbecue wine, which is not exactly what we're trying to make around here.
No, that's really rough, because you don't want that influence, and then I imagine if you can't do anything, you just end up selling the juice somewhere else, right, just to get rid of it?
I mean, Napa has been lucky. That really hasn't happened here. It did happen in some surrounding areas a few years back, and there is always that, you know, that possibility. But, yeah, knock on wood, we've been lucky so far.
Knock on wood. That's okay. Yeah. So I've always found it interesting, the amount of water you deal with in a winery. It's not, again, this idea of just irrigation, it's the idea of cleanliness, keeping a winery clean. I mean, haven't had the chance to see behind the scenes. You guys use a lot of water just day to day.
Yeah, there is a fairly high demand for water. Vineyards, as you mentioned, cleaning barrels. There's some technology that we use to minimize the use of water. So we have what we call an ozone machine, which sterilizes the barrels with very small amounts of water. And then we have these, essentially like a sprayer, if you will, that fits inside the barrel. And it's like a high-pressure spray. So it uses less volume of water. So we're doing what we can there to minimize the use of water. But inherently, it's a water-intensive business. I mean, the vineyard's probably the most, they use a lot of water. The grapes, the vines, they need water to survive.
Sure. So, but at this point, I mean, there's no crystal ball. You just kind of have to ride out this season and see where things go, right?
Yeah, it's early, and there's lots of time, lots more time for rain. And they say the quality, if you're looking for quality, the quality is really made. And, you know, we look for weather in August and September. Those are crucial months where you don't want a lot of rain. You want some, you know, just nice sunshine, ripen the grapes slowly but evenly. So you don't want heat spikes. You don't want it to be 100 degrees. I mean, the ideal temperature for grapes is probably in the mid-80s during the day and the mid-50s in the evening.
Sure. And this weather now is, we're about 65 today. There was originally rain in the forecast this week, too, as I saw, but that kind of went away, didn't it?
Yeah, it came in it wet.
Yeah. That's got to be a heartbreaker for you. I mean, again, as a farmer, eek, I mean, when you need it, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's in California right now. It's a bigger deal, not just for the whole population. And again, we're lucky. We've got a couple of wells here that are quite deep on our property and allow us to irrigate, drip irrigate our vines quite well. But we need rain for the whole state. It really does does some good for not just for what we farm, but there's a lot of other crops out there that need rain. Not to mention the forests and drinking water.
Well, the great irony is being next to this wonderful body of water they call an ocean. You know, water everywhere. We're kind of situation, but of course, salt water. Not much you could really do with that, right?
No, it'd be costly to convert that over to fresh water.
It's very costly to do that. It's amazing. I'm going to go back to 2012, which was this dream vintage that everybody's talked about. Did you have a higher production for that?
Yeah, 2012 was, as you perfectly put, a dream vintage, both in quantity and quality. We're going to make the best wine we've ever made in the history of the estate, and we've been making wines now for almost 30 years, 28 years now. So we're really excited with the quality. And then the quantity was good. I mean, it's so the old adage that you don't necessarily need a small harvest to make great wine. It's not always true. You know, you can you just need great weather. You know, kind of seamless weather where it's that 85 and 55 with not a lot of rain during harvest. And we got all those things happening to us in 2012 and as well in 2013. So really two back-to-back wonderful vintages that we're all going to taste this week at Premier Napa Valley, which is the focus will be 2012 vintage and mostly Cabernets. And there won't be any, it won't be a secret. The wines will be out there, and it's not just on our estate. There's going to be a lot of great wine in 2012, and the consumer out there that is looking for some, you know, wonderful Cabernet from Napa Valley should make a little room in their cellars and in their wallets, if you will, for some of these wonderful wines that will be hitting the market in the next 12 to 24 months.
This might be a bit of a naive question, but do you think something like a 12, because of the nature of the harvest and how well everything went, makes it maybe a bit more of an ageable wine, or has that not really come into play at all?
Ageable? There's, you know, every vintage has it, especially in these parts. I mean, our so-called tougher vintages are not that tough. I mean, some of the other growing regions in the world, they deal with some real ups and downs, some hail and some real tough situations. And you know, I always look at what we have to deal with and go, like, I think we got it a little easier here. California is the sunshine state, and Napa Valley is really blessed with some great year-over-year growing situations. So there can be some ageable wines made in every vintage. I just, in general, though, what 2012 gave us is across the board really, really great wines. I mean, it was really hard to make a wine that wasn't great in 12. You know, so maybe 2010 was another great vintage, but more difficult to work with. And it was some people did better than others. Where in 12, I just think you can almost, you know, I'm sure there's going to be better and worse wines, but you can throw a dart against the wall and hit a good wine, let's say, in 2012.
Yeah, I was hearing a lot of people saying that the whole idea was, all due respect to the winemakers, the wine literally seemed to make itself.
Yeah, and ultimately that's what it's all about. Us winemakers try just, we got to get out of the way. You know, that's my whole adage is the wines are made in the vineyard. It's all about the grapes. And once you get those grapes into your winery, you try not to meddle with them. You try not to interfere or get in the way and let the vineyard speak all the way through to the wines. Do not over manipulate it. So once you kind of sit back and learn those ideas, and you could say the same thing about cooking. You know, some chefs, you know, with great ingredients, you don't need to do much. You can go to Italy. They try to leave the ingredients as natural as they can. A beautiful tomato is a beautiful tomato. You don't need to dump a bunch of stuff on top of it. And we look at that the same in the wine business. We have wonderful fruit. Just try not to manipulate it.
Yeah, that's well said. No, I agree. Sometimes we do make too much of it, and maybe then you do have those more difficult vintages where you have to be more interactive, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it.
And be more selective. Yeah. You know, what happens is, you know, on our property we have 12 different blocks of Cabernet, and some do better than others in more trying vintages. Where in 12, it seems like everything was good. Or in 2010, maybe half of the blocks were really, really good. So we keep those wines separate, and that becomes our famous blend called Padrone here, which is our top Tête de Cuvée Cabernet blend. And in 12 vintage, we'll be able to make more of that, and 10 less.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Padrone?
Padrone, yeah.
Well,
it's a familiar word.
Marlon Brando was the Padrone in the Godfather movie. So it means the head of the family, the boss. In our case, it was a homage to my father. Mm-hmm. My father passed away back in 1998, and this bottling I created for him as an homage is the best thing I could produce on the property. The best of the best.
Serious stuff.
Yeah, and I lost my mother in the mid-90s as well, so we do a very special Chardonnay bottling from the oldest vines on the property, which are now 34 years old, called Hope's Cuvée. My mother was Hope Signorello, so an homage to her. So I got those two, and then as I mentioned at the top of this discussion, I have two new daughters, so I have two new wines coming out, which is maybe... I don't think anybody knows about this, so this could be a bit of a scoop here.
Breaking news.
I'm going to do two very, very special small lots of Cabernet off the property. One's going to be called Cuvée Athena, and one's going to be called Cuvée Alessandra, and they're going to be limited to about 100 cases each, but they're really going to be something special. We picked the absolute best two blocks on the property to make these wines. In 2012. So the first vintage, we're coming out of the gate with the greatest vintage on the estate, and now we're picking the two best blocks on the property. So should be something fun to look forward to. There won't be a lot of them. We are previewing the Cuvée Athena at the Premier Napa Valley on Saturday, the barrel tasting, so you'll be able to come by and try it.
I will look forward to that. I make sure I will, too. You know, what a great thing to be able to do as a winemaker. You have these tribute to your parents and then the tribute to your kids. You know, this is really where this becomes part of. It's not just family history, but it's history in the Valley, too. That's really amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun in that respect, and it also keeps you honest because, you know, you got your tributes out there, your family, and they better be good.
Yeah. Or in 20 years, you may pay just when you need them most. I remember, and this was, how old is Athena?
She's just turning 3.
Okay, because you had a card with, was it her picture, I believe, at your barrel?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to remember that. It was really cool. I just really liked that. And I just refresh my memory, if you would.
Yeah, Athena, yeah, we did a little fun thing for Premier in the last 2 years now. And essentially, she was part of the whole thing. And she had something to do with the label. You know, it was a very kind of playful label that looked like something a little kid would produce. So it was kind of fun. And we also have these very large bottles here, these 18-liter bottles. So we put her, she was holding on to one, and the bottle was basically as tall as she was, standing almost, basically holding our standing next to this bottle. So it's kind of the future for her, because ultimately that's where this is all headed, right? I'm one day going to retire, and my two daughters are going to take the reins of this place, and it'll be theirs, and they'll also have some wines to taste that have their name on the bottle.
But you're still a young guy, and that's a ways off.
Well, I've been doing it. This is my 26th year making wine. So I feel like it was yesterday, but it's been 26 years, and I just hit my 50 marker. Turned 50 about nine months ago. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
I think.
Yeah. So. You know, they say, you know, the fun thing about the wine business is when you really think about it, and it's a crazy business in this respect, you get one time a year to make wine. So you know, if you live to be 80, let's say, and you started when you're 20, you get 60 times in your lifetime to perfect your craft. 60 times, not a lot. Oh. You know, you have a restaurant, you get 60, you open 60 days, you got every day you can perfect your craft. But we only get to make wine once a year, and then we got to wait 11 months and 30 days to think about it and say, what could I have done differently? So it's realistic. I mean, I started when I was in my 20s, but, you know, if I'm lucky and hit my 80s or 90s, I get 30, 40 more shots at this. And it's kind of fun to think of it in that respect, about how little chance you have in your lifetime really to grow from it. It's a year-over-year-over-year basis. So that's one thing I look at in this business. The other one that's kind of fun is it's the only business I can see out there that we actually get the opportunity to take from the dirt and all the way to the consumer. One seamless transition. And it's a lot of fun when you, you know, you have a piece of raw dirt, you plant the vines, and 5 years later, you make some wine, and then 3 years later, you bottle it, and then eventually you get to the consumer, and then 30, 40 years, that wine, if it's a great wine, will live on. So it's a long tradition, and it's a great way to go from kind of beginning to end with the consumer.
Well, plus you can chart your history. I mean, with these years, 20-some years you've been doing it, you go back and look at what year was what. I mean, do you have that? Do you have vintages that stick out to you that are really favorites? Or
yeah, sure. And that's we're having a couple of lunches and a dinner in the next few days with some trade that's flying in from around the world. And that's what we're doing. We're going into our library and showing some past vintages, because I make wines to age. I mean, as good as they are new, they have the pedigree to improve and really age gracefully for 20 years, 20 plus. So we're going to taste a vertical of my Hopes Cuvée Chardonnay back to the 90s, and we're going to taste a vertical of the Cabernet as well. So it gives people, you know, an idea of what it's hard to tell people, well, by the way, if you keep this wine for 20 years, it's going to taste like this. Well, proof's in the pudding, so we're going to show them in the next few days.
There's something to be able to go back on that wine and try it, though. I mean, do you find yourself going down memory lane a little bit, even though you've been doing this for a while, when you're tasting some of these older wines? I mean, does it bring back those memories?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Sometimes you look back and say, well, that wine I made 15 years ago, and it seemed like yesterday. I mean, time flies quickly in our lives, and wine kind of really, really crystallizes that, because they have dates on the bottles, and you know, it's one after another, you know, and you look back over the years when you do a vertical tasting, and you remember, you know, what the weather was like that year, or what was going on in the world that year. I mean, this, you know, we made wine in 2001, and then, you know, we all remember what that was like. I mean, September 11th, I mean, we were picking grapes in that around that period, right? So you know, that kind of crystallizes all these moments in time. And you could, the Bordelais have been making wine for hundreds of years, and they made wines, and you know, I've tasted some wines made in 1945, and you imagine thinking back when this one was made, what was going on in those in France,
and very different times
in Italy, yeah. You know. So, yeah, there's a lot of history in a bottle, speaking to different things.
So we're talking about Cabernet, and of course, Cab is king in Napa Valley. But for our listeners, what else are you making?
Well, the Cabernet with the Merlot and Cab Franc, so we have all three as a blend. We do the Chardonnay, as I mentioned, the Hopes Cuvée. And then I do make some other wines that very small production. I do a white Bordeaux blend, a very traditional white Bordeaux blend with Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. The name of the wine is Seta, S-E-T-A. And Seta is an Italian word for silk. So wine is very silky. It's an appropriate name. Inspiration is some famous French white Bordeaux by the name of Hauprion Blanc. Another one would be La Ville Hauprion, a very, very famous handcrafted white Bordeaux blends. Those are my role models. Really nice wine, great with you know, food. You can drink it on its own. It ages well, and it does really well in Napa Valley. They're both varietals, Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. We also, my love for Pinot Noir, I make a small amount of Pinot Noir. I don't really talk about it much because we don't even grow the grapes here. It's kind of a little special project I keep hidden from most. But I like Pinot Noir, and it's a wonderful wine to have in the cellar for, you know, the odd dinner that we have. So just make a small amount of Pinot Noir. We do have Syrah on the estate, so we make a very small production single vineyard Syrah, which is co-fermented with Viognier in the tradition of Côte Rôti. Great wine, but again, we try to, they're not big production wines for us. They're I guess by any standards, we don't make a lot of any of the, even our Cabernet, but there are 200 cases of these wines. So they don't get talked about much. But if you get the chance to try them when you come to the winery, I think you'd be impressed.
Well, when you're talking about an output of 7,000 cases, I mean, you are considered a small winery, which makes it that much more special to visit here, right? I mean, that's the idea of getting that real family taste of Napa Valley.
Yeah, this is handcrafted, small production boutique. You know, a little something different here is that we're all estate grown and bottled for the, except for this Pinot Noir I mentioned earlier, but we grow everything on the property, and that really is a beautiful luxury. It's great to be able to have control year after year after year off the same vineyard sources. So, and our vines are quite old here. We got vine age anywhere from 25 to 34 years old on the estate, which we feel brings a lot more quality to the bottles. As the vines get older, vines are like people. When they're young, they're exuberant, but they're kind of a little sometimes, disjointed, if you will, brash. So they make, young vines make wines that are a little more in your face. As people get old, they get more wisdom, the wine, more character. That's exactly what vines do. They give the wines more character. They're not as fruit forward, but they're classier, and they got more, they're just more interesting. And it's a perfect analogy, young versus old in people, and young versus old in vines.
For our listeners to be able to find your wine, other than on the website, your distribution again?
Yeah, we're distributed across the U.S. We're in Canada, and actually we do sell into Europe and Asia. Our wines are very limited in production, though, so you will find them at more or less the fine retail situations across the country, fine restaurants. If you're unsuccessful there, you can always go onto our website, SignorelloEstate.com, and if you go into an area, look to the map, and at the top of the page you can actually input your zip code, and it will tell you where we've sold our wines into your local area, whatever city you're in. And if you can't find anything that works there, then you can always buy it directly from the winery. We can ship into many of the estates, not all of them, but many. And then I would also, I think, be important to mention, I have three other projects that I'm involved with. Another one's called Fuse Wines in Napa Valley. It's a Cabernet. The wines are not made on this estate. They're made in another facility. And the idea there was to offer my talents, but in a wine that's less expensive. So good quality Napa Cabernet without the big price tag. So something that is more affordable, you can drink on a... maybe a daily basis.
Daily basis, sure. Yeah. What are you talking about price-wise?
That wine, anywhere, you'd find it in this 20-some-odd dollar range. For Napa Cabernet, that's a steal. And then I have another wine called Edge Wines, which is a blend of Napa fruit and a little bit of Sonoma fruit. And, you're looking there for right around $20, $18 to $20, really good value. And then my newest project, which came on the heels of the 2008-2009 collapse of our economy, I had customers out there saying, we like some of these other wines too, but even those are too expensive. So I created a new project called Trim. Trim the costs, trim your budget.
Good name.
And the first vintage is 09, so we're on right now. We're selling the 2011 Trim Cabernet, which is a blend of Mendocino and Lake County fruit. And that you can find anywhere from $10 to $13 across the U.S., and really good value because it's well made. It's got some really nice vineyard sources. It's not Napa, and that's why we can keep the price down. But that's a true everyday. You can drink that. You can have a party and drink that wine, and it's not your typical $10 to $12 wine. It's got real character. It's not sweet and full of oak chips and stuff. It actually tastes like some nice fruit. And
Thank God.
So trimwines.com, edgewines.com, and fusewine.com without an S. Those are three separate websites, and you can find those. Also, they have on their websites, they have places where you can put the zip code in and find out if they're available in your town. You're probably more apt to find Trim, Edge, and Fuse in your markets than Signorello, just because of the nature of the production. I mean, Signorello is very limited, and especially the last couple of harvests. We haven't hit the larger 12 harvests yet. We're in the 10 and 11 harvests, which are the smallest harvests we've seen on this estate in years. So there's just not a lot of those vintages to go around.
Yeah. For our visitors who want to come visit at the winery here, I don't remember a senior all by appointment, or is it just a matter of dropping by?
Yeah, we are by appointment. If you're driving up the trail and just take a right and come up our driveway, we probably won't throw you out, but
nobody chasing you with a shotgun down the driveway. Mark an appointment.
But we would appreciate an appointment. We have some very special offerings here. One is Enoteca Signorello, which is a 4-course food and wine offering with the Kobe beef, and it's a nice hour and a half long tour tasting some food. Really a wonderful way to experience Signorello. If we also have some of the other kind of smaller offerings, if you will, where it's just like a charcuterie plate or a cheese plate and some wines, or we just do a straight tasting. But we do taste all of our wines, even our Padrone, which is a $155 retail bottle of wine. We still taste that because I'm a big believer in offering all these wines for tasting. And you can taste a flight of Obscove, Padrone, and the estate cab and some other things. We rotate in some of the small lots that aren't available outside the estate as the alternative wine, if you will. So the Saita is usually tasted, the white Bordeaux blend, as well as the Syrah, and we do a little Merlot and Cab Franc once in a while as well. We offer pleasure in a bottle.
That's right. Come back for another visit. One more time, if you give me the website, just so we can get that back to our listeners one last time.
Sure. It's signorelloestate.com, spelled SignorelloEstate.com.
And there you go. Ray, thanks again for inviting us back. It's a real pleasure to be back here in Napa for Premier Week, and look forward to seeing you behind the barrel.
Thanks. It's great to be here as well with you, and I look forward to spending a little time around the barrel in the next few days.
Great. There we go.
Learn more by visiting SignorelloVineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Our intern is Alex McLean. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2014.